This is the Battle Guerrilla LEGO Podcast, episode 35, LEGO Dungeons & Dragons, set review, collectible minifigures preview, and more. The secret title of today's episode is Hobby Fusion, two great tastes that taste great together. I'm really hoping that this week's secret title isn't too obscure. It's supposed to make you imagine two nerds, each with an armload of their hobby of choice restricting their view, causing them to run headlong into each other and crash to the ground, scattering their individual collections into a one big mixed-up pile. The first one exclaiming, "Hey, you got your Lego in my D&D!" And the other exclaiming, "Hey, you got your D&D in my Lego!" Before discovering that the two individual hobbies become even better when combined. If that doesn't ring a bell for you, well, then I'm dating myself with TV commercial references. Let's just move on. The disclaimer. LEGO is a trademark of the LEGO Group of Companies, which does not sponsor, authorize, or endorse this podcast. Are you ready to listen to the world's number one LEGO podcast? Recorded in my apartment.
Podcasting is awesome, especially when it's about the LEGO fan scene. Podcasting is awesome. Hey, check out this audio stream.
Welcome to the Battle Guerrilla LEGO Podcast. My name is Mike Sneathan, I'm your host. Let's get right into it. Mid to late January 1974, the birth of the role-playing game. Specifically, the birth of that first role-playing game, Dungeons & Dragons. I didn't start playing it when it first hit shelves. The game was suggested for ages 12 and up, and at the time, I had just turned 3. So I was probably a little too young. Maybe I could have pulled it off. I was a somewhat precocious youngster. But looking at the game's 50-year history, I can say that I've been playing, off and on again, for 42 of those 50 years. Wizards of the Coast has teamed up with the LEGO Group, and on April 4th, 2024, or April 1st for those of us in the LEGO Insiders program, we will be getting, or will have gotten, the first ever official D&D LEGO set in celebration of that 50-year milestone. I started playing with LEGO in 1977. I started playing Dungeons & Dragons in 1982. So there is an extent to which I have been waiting for this first official fusion of LEGO and D&D since early childhood. If you're a regular listener to this podcast, you already know about my introduction to LEGO. Since that's already been covered, let me tell you about my introduction to Dungeons & Dragons. Growing up, I had this cousin who lived just a couple of blocks away from me. He was 4 years older and was equal parts relative and nemesis. For most of my youth, I looked up to him and tried to get him to like me, and that never ever worked out well for me. When I was about 12 years old, he started talking about this new game that he and his friends had been playing, something called Dungeons & Dragons. I had a healthy interest in fantasy and sword and sorcery stuff by this point in my life, largely as a result of books like Lloyd Alexander's The Chronicles of Prydain series and movies like Dragon Slayer. So I was very interested in this game my cousin was talking about. After hearing about how wonderful the game was and how much fun it is to play, I asked if he'd play with me. He, of course, said no. I was too young. Which was technically a lie, as I was 12, and the game stated it was for ages 12 and up, but I didn't know all of that at the time. I started asking people at school if they'd ever heard of Dungeons & Dragons. My best friend, Chad, had not heard of the game, but like me, was very interested in it once I started telling him what little I knew about it. He was also a fan of the Chronicles of Prydain and Dragon Slayer, both of which I had introduced him to. A couple of the people that I talked to had older brothers who played. They knew a little bit about it, but not enough to sufficiently answer all of my questions. I did discover, however, that D&D was not what I was envisioning. I had pictured it as a colorful game board that folded in half and was stored in a rectangular box when not in use, along with whatever little plastic pieces you used to move around the board, and a pair of traditional cube-shaped dice with dots on each face to indicate a number. This was 1982. What I just described was what 90%+ of games were. But not D&D. D&D, I was told, was a stack of hardcover rule books and a handful of weird-looking dice with actual numbers on their faces instead of dots. There were other things that went with the game, a lot of which were optional and sold separately. But at its core, hardcover rule books and weird-looking dice. I kept pestering my cousin to let us play. By this point, it was both Chad and I who wanted in on this. I told him that I could probably get Mom to buy me whatever rule books I needed. He scoffed at this and informed me that real D&D players don't need those rule books. That those rule books were just for the people too stupid to figure out how to play the game on their own. Looking back at this situation, I have no idea if my cousin was playing some weird bastardized game where their so-called dungeon master just ran with a no-rules, anything-goes style, or if my cousin had simply heard about the game, had no actual involvement with it, and was using its mere existence to torment me with something I couldn't have. Neither of those would really surprise me. And then one day, Chad and I were talking about D&D during the lunch period at school, when our classmate Bob was walking by. Bob stopped for a moment, listened to what we were talking about, and said, "I play D&D. Bob answered all the questions we had, including, "Can we join your group?" The answer to which was, "Probably not, no." Bob's older brother was their group's dungeon master. But it didn't take long for us to formulate a new question. Could you start a new group and DM for us? Bob had to think about that. But a couple days later, he agreed. Now, at this point in time, Dungeons & Dragons had two different versions which were not compatible with each other. Basic D&D and Advanced D&D. You'd think, with those names, you could start with Basic and then move your game on into Advanced. But Basic D&D only covered the first three levels of play, and if you wanted more, you had to move on to Expert D&D, which was the evolution of Basic. With Advanced, you started your characters at level 1, so you couldn't simply bring your third level Basic characters over to Advanced and expect that to work. Bob wanted us to start with Basic, as it was easier to get into, and if it worked for us, then we could do an Advanced D&D campaign with new characters later on. Also, the Basic rulebook was paperback, and a lot cheaper to get into than Advanced. Mom bought me a copy of that rulebook, along with a starter adventure, The Keep on the Borderlands, which I handed off to Bob. Basic was a really simplified version of the game. Not that we knew that the first time we played. For instance, Basic had three possible alignments, lawful, neutral, and chaotic, instead of the usual 9. And the character classes were interesting. The included classes were clerics, dwarves, elves, fighters, halflings, magic users, and thieves. Yes, dwarves, elves, and halflings counted as classes in the game, not races. It was just assumed that their racial stereotypes were simply class abilities. All clerics, fighters, magic users, and thieves were human. It said so right there in the rules. The keep on the borderland had a strange setup, which required extra work on the DM's part to prepare for play. Bob's prep work didn't seem to be going fast enough for Chad and I, and I can remember us, mostly good-naturedly, verbally berating him about that at recess. Finally, after what seemed like far too long to a couple of really impatient 12-year-olds, we had our first session. My character survived those first few hours of gameplay. Chad's character was killed in battle. We did eventually move from basic to advanced. Then, years later, from Advanced Dungeons & Dragons to Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 2nd Edition, when they published that revised set of rules. The current version of the game is 5th edition, but it's also now 50 years old, as previously mentioned. In October of 2022, LEGO Ideas announced a contest to design a set to celebrate the 50th anniversary of Dungeons & Dragons. The contest ran for a little over a month, then eventually went to a public vote. On January 5th, 2023, the winner was announced. An AFOL named Lucas Bolt, whose nom de brick is Bolt Builds, had submitted an entry entitled Dragon's Keep, Journey's End, which would become the official 50th anniversary Dungeons & Dragons LEGO set. And nearly a year and a half after the initial announcement of the contest, on March 19th of this year, LEGO officially unveiled the set. It would be an 18-plus set in the LEGO Ideas line. Set number 21348, 3,745 pieces, 6 minifigures, and a price tag of $359.99. It's commonly accepted that a good price for a new LEGO set is 10 cents per part. It's also generally accepted that there will be what's referred to as the IP tax on licensed sets. Bricknerd.com did an analysis of the IP tax several months ago, and it apparently tends to be about a 20% markup. The Dungeons & Dragons set would count as a licensed property. And at 3,745 pieces for $359.99, you'll be paying just 9.6 cents per piece. So the price is actually low for what you'll be getting. Before I get into the details about the set itself, it is important to note that it isn't just a LEGO set. It's not just a display piece. This set is an actual, playable Dungeons & Dragons adventure. You can download the free 20-page PDF from LEGO Insiders, or spend 2,700 Insiders points and get the exclusive paperback edition of the adventure while supplies last. You can also get the adventure through the D&D Beyond app. I'd originally planned to talk about it being a playable adventure later on in the podcast, but then I realized that describing the set would count as spoilers for the adventure. Possibly only minor spoilers, but still. So, if you're interested in having your Dungeon Master run this adventure and you don't want to be spoiled, then stop this episode here. Be sure and catch next week's episode and tell all your friends about this podcast, but stop this episode here. Spoilers begin now. Once built, this set is 19 inches tall, 15 inches wide, and 12 inches deep, and consists of a modular construction that is made up of 5 sections called the Meadow, the Inn, which is named In Plain Sight, the Tower, the Basement, and the Dungeon. And it looks like there's at least some kind of adventure in every section. Monsters to fight, traps to avoid, treasure to find. Then there are the minifigures. Players? Adventurers. You have an orc rogue, gnome fighter, elf wizard, dwarf cleric, and dragonborn bard. And a sixth figure that they don't mention outside of indicating that there is a sixth figure. In some of the promotional images, he looks like he might be a human innkeeper, but they don't actually refer to him as an innkeeper. So, villain? I'm assuming villain. In this set, LEGO went all out in terms of representation and customization. For 5 of the 6 adventurers, you get to choose their gender. How? That's actually a good question. I've heard 2 competing reports about that from people doing early set reviews. One is that LEGO's traditional use of the 2 faces on 1 head, which is usually along the lines of happy face and sad face, or surprised face and angry face, etc., is in this set, male on one side, female on the other, with a different hairpiece and beard included for the dwarf. But I've also heard reports that these 5 minifigures simply come with an additional head, giving builders a male head and a female head to choose from. Either way, I think this is a fantastic idea. The only character to not have dual gender options is the Dragonborn character. Dragonborn, for those of you unfamiliar with D&D, is basically like an anthropomorphic dragon. Bipedal, bimanus, shaped like a humanoid, but scaly and with a more dragon-like head. But I looked at a picture of that figure, and I honestly wouldn't be able to tell you what gender it was. Is it male? Is it female? I suppose it's whichever one you want. The heads of the other 5 minifigures are all different colors, a variety of skin tones. And this is where the other impressive bit of customization comes in. Everybody is wearing gloves and long pants. There isn't exposed skin on any of these characters, meaning that you can switch the races and classes around just by swapping their heads and hair or headgear. You want the orc to be the wizard instead of the rogue? Put the orc's head on the wizard's body. Think that the elf would make a better bard than the dragonborn? Again, just swap out the heads. The bodies also lack any gender-specific shaping in their designs, so every represented class can be any of the represented race and gender combinations. There are also some monsters in the set for the minifigures to fight. Classic D&D opponents like the Beholder, Owlbear, Mimic, and Displacer Beast are brick-built constructs. Plus, of course, the Red Dragon Cinder Howl with fabric wings. Others, like the Trio of Skeletons and the Myconid Duo, are more minifigure-like. The skeletons have weapons and armor, so that if you can defeat them during gameplay, then afterwards, you can loot the bodies. Because it isn't really a proper Dungeons & Dragons game if there aren't bodies to loot at some point. I will most likely not be picking up this set for myself. Oh, I'd really like to have it. But not having any money makes some of these new LEGO set releases very, very sad for me. This is episode 35 of the podcast, though. Maybe one of my listeners will buy it for me as a congratulations on reaching 35 episodes gift. You never know. From April 1st through 7th, while supplies last, there is a free gift with purchase that comes with the LEGO D&D set. This gift with purchase is a 160-piece buildable chest. Like a treasure chest. A perfectly ordinary treasure chest. Not dangerous at all. Go ahead. Open it. It's safe. Okay, I tell a lie. It's actually a mimic. Multiple eyes, lots of sharp teeth, big blue tongue. But if you decide to risk it, there's enough room inside the thing to store a set of gaming dice. I mean, I certainly wouldn't risk it, but that is what the set was designed as. But the D&D set isn't the only bit of 50th anniversary-ness that Wizards of the Coast and the LEGO Group have in store for us. Because September 1st sees the release of the first, and I'm calling it the first in the hopes that there will be others, series of Dungeons & Dragons collectible minifigures. 12 blind-boxed figures, $4.99 apiece, as per usual. The lineup for this wave of figures is as follows. Dragonborn Paladin carries a shield and a mace, new mold for the armor and the mace head. Aarakocra Ranger. The Aarakocra are a race of anthropomorphic bird folk, complete with wings, granting them the ability to fly. This figure will use the fawn legs and will have new molds for its head and for its wings, armed with a bow and accompanied by a small dog. Being a giant bird, kind of wonder if that dog is his lunch. The next five figures on the list all have choosable gender, like the figures from the D&D set. Still no idea if the inclusion of both genders is going to be one double-sided head or just two different heads. Tiefling Sorcerer. Tieflings are humanoids, most often depicted as human, but sometimes dwarf, elf, gnome, orc, or whatever, that have some demon blood in them, and that shows in their physical appearance. This figure has a new molded hairpiece with horns, along with a set of trans-pink claws, and also comes with a red baby dragon. Dwarf Barbarian comes with a new molded axe and torch. Halfling Druid, this would be Hobbit Druid, if not for a copyright lawsuit filed by a game company that held a Lord of the Rings license back in the late 70s. This one wears a fancy cape with antlered hood, new mold for that, carries a staff, and has a bird. Half-elf Bard has a new hair mold, wears a scarf, has a sword, and a lute. The first of the obvious villains in the set is a Githyanki Warlock. I'm classifying him villain because Githyanki are all typically lawful evil in alignment. This figure comes with an eyeball staff and a new knife piece. And they're the last on this list with the multi-gender option. There's a Mind Flayer who has a new head mold because it's very tentacly in the lower half of its face. It's by no means a perfect match, but if I really needed an Ood for a Doctor Who mock, I suspect I could use the Mind Flayer head. Mind Flayer comes with an Intellect Devourer, which is depicted here as a pudgy little brain on four legs, and I want a bunch of these little guys. They are adorable. The last four figures on my list are all individual named characters from the game. Strahd von Zarevich? Zarevich? Yankovic? Weird Strahd Yankovic. No. Let's just call him Count Strahd. Count Strahd's figure is wearing a cape, he has a sword and goblet, and is accompanied by a rat. This is the primary villain of the Ravenloft campaign setting, vampire, necromancer, and ruler of Barovia. The Lady of Pain, with fancy cape, and a new molded hairpiece. Her accessory is a printed cube. She is the enigmatic ruler of the floating city of Sigil in the Forgotten Realms, a place with portals to every plane of existence, as well as multiple locations within the prime material plane. Zas Tam, wearing a dark red cape with a translucent red skull and an energy blast for accessories. Powerful lich and necromancer, commander of a huge army of the undead, and leader of the country of Thay. And finally, Tasha the Witch Queen, who comes with a book and cauldron, and uses the hair and witch hat combo from the Hocus Pocus set. A powerful archmaid raised by Baba Yaga, the mother of witches. Some of her aliases are figures of legend, and some of the spells she wrote are used by adventurers everywhere. And that's everything we currently know about the product releases from this Wizards of the Coast LEGO Group collaboration for the Dungeons & Dragons 50th anniversary. On April 6th, there will be a special presentation on the Dungeons & Dragons YouTube and Twitch channels, and at lego.com/dnd, that's D-N-D, not D ampersand D, a recording of a special game night held at the LEGO House, where Dungeon Master Anjali Bamani ran the Dungeons Keep Journeys End adventure for players Louis Carrazzo, Ginny D, and D&D LEGO set fan designer Lucas Bolt, and LEGO designer Jordan Scott, who was on the team that refined the set for production. Hopefully, I pronounced all those names correctly. There's nothing that says this is anything other than a one-shot product. Well, two-shot counting the CMF series. Is it possible that there will be more LEGO D&D further down the line? Sure. But we've thought that about other projects, and that's been very hit or miss for us. LEGO picked up the license for Doctor Who once, and aside from a couple of entries in the LEGO Dimensions video game, they produced a grand total of one set. Everyone was certain that was just the beginning of LEGO Doctor Who, but no. Although, with the BBC's recent partnership with Disney Plus on Doctor Who going forward, and Disney's friendly relationship with LEGO, it wouldn't surprise me if we got a new LEGO Doctor Who theme focusing on Shurigatwa's 15th Doctor? You never know. The Optimus Prime set from a couple of years ago seemed an impossibility made real, given that Transformers is a Hasbro property and LEGO is one of their competitors. A real once-in-a-lifetime event. But now, all the rumors are telling us that Optimus is going to be joined in LEGO form this summer by his Transformers ally Bumblebee. Really, the only people who can predict what LEGO is going to do are the people at LEGO. But anyway, to me, more LEGO D&D would certainly be welcome. One of the LEGO designers of the final version of the set has said that he'd like it if LEGO would do more D&D sets at more affordable price points in the future. But I imagine that will depend on how well this first set sells. From a non-official standpoint, I'd also like to see some more Dungeons & Dragons-style mocks happen. At last year's BritCon, there was a massive D&D collaborative build built along the same lines as the Bricks Cascade Dream Bunkers collab. 16 stud by 16 stud by 13 brick high modules. Just absolutely filled with D&D style craziness. A couple of years ago, Kyle Smith, official friend of the podcast, and I were talking about the potential for a D&D collab where you'd create a build standard, and then the various collaborators would build a room with a connecting corridor with monsters and or traps and or treasures, etc. Everything would link up to create a massive dungeon floor plan. Then, during the public days, we'd bring in a handful of experienced D&D players and someone to DM the whole thing and play the game for the public to watch. There were, of course, far too many logistic problems for us to suggest this to people, but it was a fun idea to toss around for a couple of days. If you're interested in listening to another episode where I discuss D&D and other role-playing games, check out my November 7th, 2023 episode entitled Level Up Your RPG, How LEGO Enhances Tabletop Adventures. A couple of episodes ago, I announced the first LEGO Haiku Challenge. A LEGO Haiku is, of course, my little contribution to LEGO build criteria. It is defined as a complete mock in three sections, usually lined up in a row, where the first section is made of exactly five pieces, the middle section is made of exactly seven pieces, and the final section is once again made of five pieces, just like the syllable count in the Japanese poetry style that bears its name. I posted a photo of two-thirds of a haiku and challenged you to build your version of the missing piece. The photo was of a five-piece Federation starship and a five-piece Klingon bird of prey. Nobody played along. Or, if they did, Instagram, Twitter, and Blue Sky neglected to show me those entries when I did my searches for hashtag Lego Haiku Challenge. Oh well. These things are sometimes slow to catch on. Maybe this one will go better. Lego Haiku Challenge number 2. Assuming that all went well, I posted two photos to Instagram last night. One of those was the official finished version of the first challenge. The seven-piece segment that was missing from that picture was a Borg cube. The second photo was the new challenge. This time, all I'm showing you is the seven-piece middle section, and I'm asking you to build the five-piece sections that belong on either side of it. The seven-piece section in question is a black rectangular frame with six red tentacles rising up out of it. And go! Post pictures of your solution to either Instagram, Twitter, or Blue Sky using the hashtag Lego Haiku Challenge. I'll post the entire version of my haiku in 2 weeks, assuming nothing goes wrong. Okay. Be here next week when I'll be talking about the 1980s in general and 1985 specifically. It'll be fun. Links to the podcast's social media pages and wish lists can be found at battlegorilla.com/links. If you enjoyed this podcast episode, tell all your friends about it. And if you hated it, then definitely recommend it to your enemies. And remember, a $359.99 Lego set is the traditional gift to give a podcaster upon reaching their 35th episode. Really, it is. Trust me. The podcast's intro and outro themes, Podcasting is Awesome, inspired by Tegan and Sarah's Everything is Awesome, and Ode to Gibberish, were created by Michael Reinch.
I think I just closed Pandora's box, and I want to know if you can punch a sucker. How else would you know that I've done everything except any of it? You can have your bald eagle afraid of fire, and you can eat it too, and there could be so much joy, and I want my libido. Well, how else? I mean, wish me luck on the prayers for junk food.